Huey paused from hoeing weeds in Eve's garden to wipe sweat from his face. Snort leaned on a fence post and rolled a cigarette.
Don't stop now. You need to keep working if you're going to free up them joints.
Huey considered breaking the hoe handle across Snort's head, but that would probably violate some stupid law passed by city folks who had no idea of the emergencies that might arise in the countryside. He looked out into the field where Walter and Tommy were working. Lester, the nester boy, had gone home.
There's weeds enough here for both of us.
You're the one that needs the exercise. Just keep doing what you're doing. I think I'll go see if there's any coffee left from breakfast. This is hard work helping you get better.
Snort entered the frame house. Shortly, Eve came out, walking to the garden, her arms folded. She looked back over her shoulder with a deeply set frown.
You reckon Snort has got a tapeworm?
Nothing about Snort would surprise me.
I asked him if he was hungry. He said no, he just wanted a cup of coffee. Then he mixed a half a pound of butter into a plateful of molasses and started swabbing it up with cold biscuits. I never saw a skinny man who could eat so much. How much longer does he figure on staying here?
Well, he ain't said, but I'm wishing he'd take a notion to leave. Every day for 2 weeks it's been. Bend that arm, work that leg, over and over. And when he gets tired, he sick Tommy on me. He's about worn me down to a nub.
Well, they say absence makes the heart grow fonder. I sure would like to get a lot fonder of Snort Yarnell. I guess he's done you some good here, but in the long run, he's a bad influence. He'll try and lead you back to the wandering ways you and him shared for all those years.
Snort's a good old boy at heart. He don't mean any harm.
Take a real hard look at him. He's got nothing. He's got nobody. He drifts from one place to another. God knows what he's looking for. I doubt Snort himself knows.
Well, he seems happy enough.
It's all a show. He's lonely and miserable, and he tries to cover it up with bluster and hoorah. You've been enough like him that it scares me half to death. He'll never change, Huey, but you can. You just have to make up your mind. It wouldn't hurt you to call on the Lord for help.
I already have. And maybe he's hurt me. See my cane hanging on the fence yonder?
She suddenly realized.
You're walking without it.
Can't hold a cane and a hoe both at the same time.
Eve was so pleased she kissed him on the cheek.
Mind what I said about Snort. The world's not big enough to hold two like him.
When she returned to the house, he noticed that Biscuit had walked up to the garden fence and stood there watching. Huey laid down the hoe and limped over to the horse, which stood still while he rubbed and patted its neck.
You're getting fat, old boy. All them oats and no work. But I don't know what I can do about it.
Tommy had been riding the horse a little, though not enough to wear off much weight. Biscuit turned his head, pointing his ears toward the road. An automobile was coming.
It's a disgrace for company to catch a cowboy with a hoe in his hand. But it'd be worse if I was herding Walter's sheep.
He patted the horse once more and turned away, propping the hoe against the fence and picking up his cane. The car was Alvin's. Snort came out of the house eating a biscuit. He walked to the garden to join Huey.
Just because we've got a little company don't mean you need to quit work. Nobody except Alvin and his women folks.
Spring was in the back seat, behind Alvin and Cora. Huey glanced down at his clothes, dirty from the garden work. He tried to brush some of the dust away, but he did little more than move it around. He felt awkward about going out to greet Spring, but it would be even more awkward if he avoided her. Every time he saw her, old emotions began to stir. Regret for old decisions, still painful, though they had seemed right. Snort sensed his indecision.
Careful, compadre. You got away once by the skin of your teeth. You may not be that lucky again.
Walter and Tommy had seen the car and were on their way in from the field. Eve hugged Cora and Spring.
Everybody come on into the house. I'll make us a fresh pot of coffee.
Eve gave Huey a quick furtive nod that told him to join Spring.
You too, Huey.
I still got a lot of work to do.
Reluctantly, he pulled away from Spring and the others, earning a reproachful frown from Eve. Spring's face was without expression. He couldn't tell what she was thinking. Huey returned to the garden, Snort walking with him.
You done right not going in the house. Women folks are always working and scheming to get somebody hitched up. They can't stand to see a man stay free.
They never got you hitched up.
And they won't. There ain't no bigger threat to a man's freedom than a good woman. Once they set a hook in him, he's a fish on a line. The kind of women I like don't ask for much. A few dollars and a little of your time. They smile when they see you coming, and they smile when you go. No tears and no regrets.
Huey nodded. It sounded good if he didn't examine it closely.
Yeah, but someday you'll be old and all by yourself. And even your money won't make them smile at you.
I don't figure on ever getting old. I'll just turn into a gray mule and go around kicking the people I don't like.
Huey retrieved his hoe and chopped a few more weeds. Snort sidled up to him and elbowed him in the ribs.
Oh, look out. She's coming.
Huey turned. Spring was at the garden gate. The sight of her stirred a warm feeling. Her voice was pleasant enough, though her smile was tentative.
Are you going to work all day?
The weeds are trying to take Eve's garden. And I need the exercise to get my joints limbered.
I've been working real hard on him. Want to get him back to where he was before that bronc messed him up.
Huey sensed that Spring wished to talk, but didn't feel free while Snort stood there.
Snort, you look like a man that needs a cup of coffee or something.
I had my coffee already. Sure, reckon I do.
He made his misgivings plain as he moved toward the garden gate, looking back.
Don't you forget what I told you about them good women.
Spring gave Huey a quizzical look. Huey shrugged.
Yeah, don't pay no attention. Half the time, Snort don't know what he's saying.
When Snort was out of hearing, Spring nodded toward Huey's cane hanging from the top wire of the fence.
It appears you're making good progress if you don't need that cane all the time. I'm pleased for you, Huey.
Well, it's Snort's doing, mostly. He keeps working me till I'm about ready to bust him with an axe handle.
Biscuit remained near the garden fence, grazing.
Are you riding your horse yet?
Well, ain't tried. It hurt too much the last time.
Perhaps it's just as well. As soon as you could ride, you would probably be wanting to leave again.
He thought he detected a faint edge of resentment, but hoped it was his imagination. It had been 4 years, and anyway, she told him it was all right for him to go. He hoed a few more weeds, waiting for her to say something else to give him some gauge of her feelings.
This may have all happened for a reason. It may be a way of turning your life around and sending you off on a new road.
I like the road I was on, and my life the way it was.
Ah, well, I remember.
Oh, look at me, all busted up. Can't do an honest day's work. What am I worth to anybody?
You're worth a lot to Walter and even Tommy.
He hoped she might add, and to me, but she did not. He wasn't sure how he would react if she had. 4 years ago, he shut a gate and locked it behind him.
So what next, Huey? What do you do now?
Well, ain't much I can do. Cowpunching was the only life I ever knew or cared to know. I may not be able to do it anymore.
You have to accept that some things may never be the same. There have been changes in what you can do, but there doesn't have to be any change in what you are.
And what is that?
You're a good and decent man right to your core. Alvin once said, you're an eagle on the wing. That's why I let you right away. Because I couldn't bear to tie up an eagle or put it in a cage. You're still the eagle you always were.
Well, I'm afraid I got my wings clipped.
But I think your eyes are still on the sky, Huey. And my feet are still on the ground.
She walked back to the house. Huey resumed hoeing the same weed over and over. Neil and Julio brought the young horses. Huey saw the eagerness in Tommy's face at the challenge of training them, and he felt a glow of envy. At least Eve wouldn't have to worry about her son leaving again for a while. He had something to stay for. Huey stood outside the corral, looking in. Neil came around and stood beside him, saying nothing at first. Huey decided one of them had to speak.
Good-looking set of horses. Ain't nobody raises better ones than Alvin.
I'm gonna ask her to marry me.
Huey flinched as if Neil had hit him in the stomach. He forced a smile, but it was as thin as water.
Well, I think she'll say yes.
Maybe she will, and again, maybe she won't.
Why wouldn't she?
Well, afraid, maybe. She's been hurt in the past.
Huey gripped the fence so hard that his knuckles ached.
Yeah, I reckon I know about that.
As badly as it pained him, he turned and looked Farley in the eye.
Farley, I think you're the right man for her. I wish you luck.
Neil walked to the house alone. Huey leaned against a post, trying to think of what he should have said to Spring, though it had already been too late. 4 years too late. The two horsebackers left soon after dinner so they could get back to the Laudermilk place in time for the chores. Alvin, Cora, and Spring stayed until mid-afternoon. Huey remained in the garden for the most part. Spring made no attempt to be alone with him again, but he was acutely conscious that her gaze followed him when he was in sight. As the visitors prepared to go, she turned to Huey.
Keep trying. You can do it.
She got into the car and did not look at him again. Eve was keenly watching them both. Once she had pushed hard to make a match between the two, hoping to crowd Huey into giving up his wandering ways and setting a more stable example for her sons. Watching the automobile pull away, Eve moved close to Huey.
You know, Spring's concerned about you.
She's concerned about everybody. She's got a good heart.
And it could have been yours.
She went back into the house. Snort jerked his head.
Let's go, Huey. There's still plenty of weeds in that garden, and you need to be working them muscles.
Instead, Huey looked for his nephew.
Tommy, I wish you'd go catch a biscuit for me.
Tommy's eyes lighted like the 4th of July.
You going to ride him?
I'm going to try damned hard.
It took you long enough to make up your mind. Or was it that school teacher done it,
Tommy saddled Biscuit and led him out of the corral.
You ain't been on him in a while, so he's fat and frisky. I'd better ride him around a little first.
The day somebody has to top out my own horse for me is the day I go looking for a night watchman's job.
He gave Snort a challenging look.
You going to hold that over my head the rest of my life? Just stepped off of the trail one time. Just once.
Huey started slowly, patting the horse on the neck, rubbing its ears.
If you're going to do it, do it.
Huey hung his cane on the fence. Carefully, he lifted his left foot to the stirrup, which forced him to put all his weight on the injured right leg. He gritted his teeth against expected pain, but it was milder than he thought. Tommy's eyes were wide with anticipation. Walter had caught on to what was happening and had come from the milking pen to watch.
Tommy, you're young and innocent, and the Lord will listen to you. Talk to him for me.
I already have.
Huey gripped the saddle horn and pulled himself up. The right leg was still stiff, and he dragged it across Biscuit's rump. A less gentle horse might have jumped. Huey sought the stirrup with his right foot, found it, and slid it in past the toes. The leg felt as if it were still bound. He couldn't bring it tightly against the horse's ribs as he did with his left, and a small ache began in the knee. But these negatives were minor considerations against a much more important fact. He was in the saddle. Walter stood beside his son, an arm around Tommy's shoulder. Snort Yarnell grinned in satisfaction as if it were all his doing. Huey rode Biscuit in a wide circle, walking him at first, then putting him into an easy trot. He hurt in several places. There was no getting around that, but he was riding. Eve came out onto the kitchen step to watch. Huey saw her lift the hem of her apron and dab it against her eyes. After a while, his side began to ache, and he knew he had done all he should for the day. But he would ride again tomorrow and the day after. It would get better. It had to. He felt like shouting as he slid down from the saddle, avoiding too much weight on the right leg. He patted Biscuit again and handed the reins to Tommy.
Unsaddle him for me, will you? And give him a double bait of oats.
Sure thing, Uncle Huey.
Walter pumped Huey's hand and Snort slapped him on the back so hard that Huey thought he'd lose his breath.
Let's go to the house. I think we could all use some coffee.
Huey retrieved the cane from the fence. He took a couple of steps on it, then detoured over to the wood pile. He pitched the cane under the top of the chopped stove wood and limped back to join Walter and Snort.
I don't believe I'll need that thing anymore.
Huey was half a mile from the house, riding Biscuit alongside Snort Yarnell, when he recognized the open-topped automobile making its way along the wagon road from town.
That's old man Jenkins' car. Wonder what he could want.
More money. Them old ranchers are always after more money. Like they ain't already got most of it corralled.
Huey put Biscuit into a stiff trot. The jarring touched off an internal ache so slight Huey could ignore it. The pain had diminished gradually day by day. He was confident it would soon be gone entirely if he didn't do something foolish and undo the progress he'd made. He waved his hat to be certain he was seen. Peeler eased the car to a stop in front of the house and took off his goggles as Huey and Snort approached.
I wished you'd look at Huey Calloway on horseback. I expected to see you rocking your life away on the front porch.
I wore out that rocking chair in about a week.
Huey dismounted slowly to shake hands with both men. He still had to be careful how he moved, for his right knee remained tricky. He had limited mobility in his left arm.
And I reckon you're ready to go back to work.
Huey sobered quickly.
Well, it's better, but it ain't that good. I'm afraid I've rode my last bronc.
Snort eyed Peeler with misgivings.
I remember you. You're the gink that spurred our outlaw bronc to a standstill and cleaned out us slash our boys.
And you're the man that drank the rest of us under the table. Hard to forget a fella with that kind of talent.
Eve came out of the kitchen.
Eve, this is Mr. Jenkins and Bronc Peeler. Gentlemen, this is my sister-in-law and Tommy's mother, Eve. Y'all go on into the house. I'll unsaddle Biscuit and be along in a minute.
Snort reached for the reins.
I'll unsaddle him. I expect Mr. Jenkins came here to talk to you.
It still made Huey uncomfortable to let someone else saddle and unsaddle his horse for him, though Tommy had been doing it lately.
Well, I'm obliged.
Huey motioned for Jenkins and Peeler to precede him into the house. Eve set three coffee cups on the table and poured them full in silent invitation. Jenkins looked Huey over before he seated himself.
I'm tickled to see you doing so much better. I've had you on my conscience, seeing as you got hurt working for me.
It wasn't your fault. I got hurt on account of Fat Gervin.
It was my ranch and my horse. If you've been concerned about your doctor bill, don't be. I paid my half and yours, too.
Well, I'm obliged.
Huey wanted to smile, but didn't. Dr. Evans had been a big winner on this deal.
Did you, manage to get rid of them Bronx fat soldier?
Jenkins scowled.
Only a couple of them. It appears I'm stuck with the rest. Buyers come and take a look, and they leave so fast their shirt tails don't touch them till they're back on the road. Bias may have to learn how to cook horse meat and make it taste like steak.
Well, I wish there was a way you could make Fat Gervin eat them.
For whatever satisfaction it might give the old man, Huey described the lie he had told Gervin about Jenkins planning to sic a battery of Fort Worth lawyers on him.
You know, it's thin comfort, but at least I worried him for a little while.
Not long enough, however, for evidently Gervin had pulled the same swindle on someone else. Huey told about the day he and Alvin found two Tarpley cowboys driving a remuda across the Laudermilk Ranch so Gervin could trade on the good reputation of Alvin's horses and palm off some scrubs he bought cheaply down on the Pecos.
I bet he's using the Tarpley Bank's money, but the bank ain't getting none of the profit. Poor old CC ain't been in any shape to keep an eye on things lately.
He described Tarpley and the old man's troubles.
You'd like CC, Mr. Jenkins. You and him have got a lot in common.
Both were highly ambitious and tight with a dollar, though this was not unusual among ranchers of their generation. Without those traits, they might not have endured and prospered through the harsh challenges of the early years. Huey was not critical. He understood the men and the drive that compelled them, though he didn't share it.
Yeah, it'll be a poorer country when CC is gone. Fat Gervin ain't fit to polish the old man's boots.
Gervin, it's not so much the money. I've lost that much through a hole in my pocket. It's the principle of the thing, letting them skin me that way. I shot a man once for stealing horses, but at least he was honest after his own fashion. He never claimed to be anything but a horse thief.
Eve kept staring at Peeler with poorly hidden curiosity. He must have looked like some foreign being to her, wearing a duster, a cap and goggles, jodhpurs and tall lace-up boots. Huey decided not to tell her he was just a reformed bronc rider. Like as not, she'd start pointing to him as a potential model for Huey's own reformation.
Looks like all I can do with them broncs is load them on a train and ship them to the Fort Worth stockyard. They ought to fetch a little something for soap, but they won't bring back what I've got in them.
Yeah, it's a pity you can't sell them back to the man you bought them from. Or maybe you could.
To Frank Gervin? He wouldn't take them back. I bet he's been laughing up his sleeve ever since he sold them to me.
Well, there ain't any use in appealing to Fat's good nature. He ain't got one. But, maybe we can appeal to his greed.
How?
Well, I got the first stirrings of a notion.
Huey arose and looked out the window toward the corral where Snort was helping Tommy and Walter unhitch a raw team Tommy'd been working to a wagon. After a minute, he turned to stare at Peeler.
Eve, what does Peeler look like to you? If you was to bump into him in town, looking like he looks right now, what would you think he was?
He looks like a gentleman, of course, dressed for a drive in an automobile.
Would you figure him for a man of means?
How else could he have an automobile? We sure don't have one.
Huey grinned at Peeler.
How are you at catching fish?
I've hooked a few in my day.
And with a little luck, you may hook the fattest fish you ever saw.
The two automobiles moved along slowly, a couple of hundred yards in front of 17 horses driven by Tommy, Snort Yarnell, and two J-Bar Vaqueros. As they came to a wire gate, Huey could see the windmill towers of Upton City half a mile ahead. He turned in the seat of Alvin Laudermilk's car and motioned for Peeler to pull Jenkins' automobile up beside him. Aparicio Rodriguez left his place behind the band of horses and loped ahead to open the gate. Huey climbed out of Alvin's car.
Mr. Jenkins, you better get in the car with us. Wouldn't do for Fett to see you and Peeler together.
Jenkins left his own automobile, and he and Huey climbed into Alvin's.
Now, Peeler, we'll let you go on into town ahead of us. You won't have any trouble spotting the bank. If a red car is parked alongside it, you'll know Fat is there.
Peeler nodded. They'd been over this already.
Now you're a rich cotton merchant from Dallas. You've just bought a big ranch, and you need a bunch of horses for your hands to ride. You're putting all your trust in him to find you some.
Peeler mumbled impatiently, for he already had it memorized.
And my name is Smith.
Smith, Jones, whatever you want it to be. Tell him you're willing to pay up to $100 a head. Nope. Better make it $125. Mr. Jenkins deserves some profit on this deal.
And a little commission for you?
I don't care about any commission. I just want to see Fat Gervin get his comeuppance. We'll wait at Dutch Snyder's saloon. It's up to you to set the hook, then me and Mr. Jenkins will try and pull in the fish.
Tommy, Snort, and one vaquero pushed the horses through the open gate. Aparicio stood holding it, waiting for the automobiles to pass. Peeler drove through first, Alvin following. Aparicio closed the gate and set his mount into a lope to catch up. Tommy and Snort took the lead, guiding the vaqueros to the Upton City wagon yard.
In case Fat might be looking out the window, maybe we ought to pull this car in on the backside of the barn.
Alvin remained far enough behind the remuda to avoid the dust. He stopped and let the motor run while the four riders penned the horses in a large lot. Huey couldn't see the bank from here, which meant that Fat shouldn't be able to see them either. Alvin parked the car at the side of the large red barn. Snort was explaining to the liveryman that the horses belonged to Mr. Jenkins of the J Bar in Alpine. Jenkins took over the negotiations.
Just throw them a little hay. Not too much. They ain't worth much.
Ain't no horse is gonna be worth much if everybody keeps buying them damned automobiles. Looks like I might have to turn this place into a garage.
Huey heard a commotion in a corral back of the barn. Two men were trying to saddle a sorrel bronc, and it was giving them a fight. Well, this was the kind of show Huey had always enjoyed watching, but somehow it put a cold feeling in the pit of his stomach. He watched as one of the punchers eared the pony down and the other mounted. Turned loose, the bronc pitched hard. Huey wanted to look away, but he couldn't. He seemed unable to move, fascinated like a bird watching a snake. It became obvious that the rider would not remain in the saddle for long. Huey held his breath. It seemed like the cowboy was suspended in midair for a whole minute before he came down like a sack of bran. The sound of impacts was physically painful to Huey. He couldn't breathe until he saw the cowboy get up and dust himself off. At least he wasn't hurt. Only then could Huey bring himself to turn away, shaking as if a cold norther had just blown in.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. For a minute there, it was like watching myself in that black stud. Damn, I used to love a good bronc ride. Now just watching it can give me a chill.
Well, it's like I told you. You lose the ability, then you lose the want to.
They walked around to the front of the barn. At the far end of the street stood the bank. Peeler had parked Jenkins' car beside it.
Looks like we've got some time to kill. If you gentlemen won't mind, I'll set everybody up to a drink.
Bad as I hate to. The saloon's right down this way.
It may be that we're not welcome, rolling me.
Some saloons didn't allow Mexicans or blacks, but Huey assured him.
Dutch Schneider ain't got an ounce of prejudice in his body.
He looked at Tommy.
Except for underage boys. He'd best take you a soda water and stay real quiet.
Schneider came from behind the bar to shake hands with the men as Huey introduced them. He was as cordial to the Mexicans as to old man Jenkins. He seemed surprised to see Alvin Laudermilk.
It is a long time since you were here to visit me, Alvin.
I took the pledge.
That is good. How better it would be if more did the same.
Though it went against the business he was in, Schneider could safely make that statement, because the pledge was more often honored in the breach than in the keeping among male citizens of Upton City. Schneider carried glasses and a bottle to a table large enough for all seven. Like Tommy, Alvin settled for a soda water. Cora should be proud of him, Huey thought. Though old Lady Faversham would no doubt find fault somewhere. She'd be terribly disappointed if she was someday to enter the pearly gates and find her son-in-law there ahead of her. Snort was already on his third drink when a thin figure stepped in the doorway, stopping to squint and accustom his eyes to the darkness of the interior. C.C. Tarpley spotted Huey from the door.
Huey Calloway! I thought I saw you coming into town a while ago.
C.C. strode with a strong step toward the table. His back was straight, his eyes alive and cheerful. Huey was taken aback. The last time he'd seen C.C., the old man looked ready for the graveyard. Huey stood up and extended his hand.
You're looking real good, C.C.
I finally decided to take your advice. I went to Fort Worth and let a couple of doctors look me over from my head to my toenails. They said the only thing wrong with me is that I got a stomach ulcer.
That's all? An ulcer?
That's it. Said I've been sitting around worrying too much instead of getting busy and grabbing a hold. I need to cut out the whiskey, drink lots of milk. Trouble is, I got 5,000 cows on that ranch and not a one of them I could pen up and milk. You reckon Walter's got a Jersey he'd sell?
He's got a heifer fixing to freshen. I'm sure he'd let you have her at a fair price.
Price is no object, as long as it's not too high.
I'm sure glad to hear the good news, C.C.
I owe it all to you, Huey. Doctor said if I take care of myself, there's no reason I can't live another 10, maybe 20 years.
Well, I'll bet Fat was just tickled to hear that.
The irony went over C.C.'s head.
Frank didn't seem as cheered up as I thought. I suspect he don't believe them doctors. He'll believe, though, when I grab a hold again out at the ranch, and I'm going to take a bigger hand in the bank, too.
Oh, he'll be real tickled.
C.C. paid for a round of drinks for the crowd, though he did not take one for himself.
I'm headed for the ranch. Riding out in Blue Hannigan's truck with a load of horse feet. There's a couple of Fat's hired hands badly in need of firing, and I feel just good enough to do it.
As C.C. left, Huey heard an automobile pull up outside. Peeler walked in, pushing his goggles up. Huey met him halfway.
How'd it go?
Peeler looked as if he'd won a big pot at poker.
If anybody asks you, you're addressing Mr. Percival Smith, a rich cotton trader from Dallas who's got more money than he knows what to do with and is willing to spend a wad of it on horses.
You think Fat bit on it?
Ever watch a wolf grab a rabbit? I could see the cash register working in his eyes. I told him I'd find me a boarding house and be around town for 2 or 3 days.
Well, we'd best give Fat a little time. If we go over and brace him too quick, he's liable to smell a badger game.
Jenkins frowned in Snort Yarnell's direction.
I don't suppose your friend Yarnell would object if I bought him another drink.
Snort was 2 drinks ahead of everybody else and working on another.
I'm getting curious. I wonder how much it'd take to fill him up.
You don't want to find out.
Huey's skin prickled with impatience, but he forced himself to wait for what he guessed was half an hour. Peeler still had half of his first and only drink, for he had to drive. Snort had drunk enough for Peeler's share and Alvin's as well. He seemed lost in a far-off, solitary world of his own. Even with a crowd around him, Snort was somehow alone. Snort was always alone, Huey realized. He had lived his life that way, drifting like a cottonwood leaf on the vagaries of the wind. He reached out for friendship, yet always left for new country before people could come too close. He had many acquaintances, but few real friends. It came to Huey as a sudden revelation that Snort was getting old, too old to continue much longer the kind of life he had led. Hard as he might fight it, trying to live young and loud and reckless, the years were pressing down on him. One day he would look in a mirror and see himself as he truly was. Perhaps he already had, and that was why he looked sad. As Huey suddenly thought that he might not be far behind Snort on that road, a chill ran through him, like the chill he felt watching the bronc ride. Huey turned to Jenkins.
You ready to go take Fat's temperature?
Let's go.
Huey looked back once at Snort before he left the saloon. Snort had his head down, as if he were half asleep. He sat at the edge of the group, but his chair was pulled back a little, not quite in the circle with the others. He was talking to himself, talking about Grady Welch and the way he died. Nobody seemed to be listening to him. Huey and Jenkins crossed the street and walked toward the bank that had C.C. Tarpley's name prominently carved across its stone front. Blue Hannigan leaned against a truck parked a little short of the door, a load of feed stacked on its bed. As Huey and Jenkins neared, Hannigan stepped free and held up his hand, gesturing for them to stop. He looked pleased.
C.C. is reading the Gospel of Fat. You wouldn't want to disturb a good sermon.
I'm fixing to get to the bottom of this, Fat.
C.C. never called his son-in-law Fat to his face except when he was provoked.
Now, I want them books brought up to date, and I don't mean sometime next week. I'll be back from the ranch tomorrow, and they better be ready.
Yes, sir.
Tarpley burst out of the bank with a strong stride that said he was in full charge. He saw Huey and Jenkins and seemed to feel that an explanation was in order.
Sometimes you got to hit a mule over the head to get its attention. Y'all got business in the bank?
We just need to talk to Fat about a horse.
I don't think he knows which end eats grass, but I'll teach him if it takes me 20 years.
He turned to Hannigan.
Ready to go, Blue?
Ready and raring.
Hannigan winked at Huey.
Now that's the C.C. I used to know.
He motioned for Jenkins to precede him into the bank, which he thought was appropriate in view of the fact that Jenkins was much the oldest. It didn't matter that he had the most money. Fat Girvin sat at his desk, his head low. His chubby face was even redder than usual, for he had taken a dressing down from his father-in-law in front of two harried, underpaid bank employees who probably enjoyed every minute of it. He looked like a man who had just been run over by a team of mules. Glancing up, he saw Huey first.
Huey Calloway, what do you want?
I want to introduce you to Mr. Morgan Jenkins of Alpine, Texas. He's the man who's fixing to sue you for $100,000.
Jenkins suddenly had Gervin's full attention.
You the man I sold them horses to?
Jenkins took a cue from Huey and drew himself up like an officer commanding a firing squad.
I am, and I've come here for satisfaction.
I sold you them horses in good faith. I don't see where you got anything to sue me for.
You said they came from Alvin Laudermilch Ranch. All they did was cross over it.
Technicality. I didn't claim that Alvin raised them.
But you wrote the letter in such a way as to deliberately mislead me. It's a federal offense to use the mails to defraud. I intend to lodge a complaint with the post office and sue you besides.
Jenkins looked at Huey.
For $200,000.
Huey took pleasure in the old man's audacity.
You never saw so many lawyers in one bunch as Mr. Jenkins has got.
Cornered, Girvin turned both palms upward as if to say he was helpless.
I got troubles enough right here in the bank. Them horses are way out yonder at Alpine. I don't know what I can do.
The horses are here, down at the wagon yard. We're giving you a chance to buy them back before the lawyers get into it. You know what a mess they can make.
It took a moment for the information to soak in on Girvin.
They're here? Well, Now, that does alter the circumstances. Now, it just so happens...
Huey suspected he had been about to say he had a ready and willing buyer, but realized that information was best kept to himself. A calculating look came into Gervin's eyes.
I've always wanted to be fair. If I was to buy them ponies back from you for the same price you paid for them, that ought to set things right. Why, it was $50 a head, wasn't it?
It was $75, and you know it.
$75, then.
But I got a lot of labor and expense in them Bronx, and a big doctor bill besides.
He motioned toward Huey.
One of them outlaws ran into a fence and broke its neck. It'll take $100 a head to square the deal.
How many head?
17. I sold 2.
Gervin tried to look displeased, but his eyes gave him away. Peeler had told him he would pay $125. Huey could see him mentally multiplying $25 times 17, his potential profit. Huey tried to do it himself and came up with $475. That didn't seem right, but he had rarely had occasion to tally up large sums.
Deal?
Gervin put down a satisfied smile.
I'll write you a check.
No check. Cash.
Frowning over the imposition, Gervin walked into the open vault and returned with a handful of greenbacks.
I want you to sign a receipt.
Jenkins counted the money for himself. The teller moved up cautiously to Gervin's side.
You'll need to make a note for that cash, Mr. Gervin. Mr. Tarpley will insist on knowing where it went.
I'll have the cash back in the vault long before he comes in tomorrow.
Mr. Gervin, I'll call off my lawyers. I'm glad we got our account settled.
So am I. Come again.
When the sun rises up out of the west.
Huey and Jenkins walked back toward the saloon.
Well, I guess I've settled my account with him, too. As much as I ever will.
I'd love to see his face when he goes looking for Peeler and can't find him.
Huey smiled over an imagined confrontation.
Even more, I'd like to be there when he tries to account to CC for that $1,700.
That'd be a show worth staying for. But I'd best be getting out of town. When he catches on, he's liable to put the sheriff on me and Peeler.
Wes Wheeler's the law. You don't need to worry about him.
Before they entered the saloon, Jenkins pulled out the roll of bills he received from Gervin.
I wouldn't have got it done if it hadn't been for you, Huey. I feel like I owe you a commission.
He peeled off $100 and considered a moment.
Oh, what the hell?
The old man peeled off $100 more. Huey debated about accepting.
Mr. Jenkins, it was worth it to see Fat up a tree.
But he considered his financially embarrassed condition and took the money.
I'm still needing a foreman for the Circle W. Looks to me like you're healed well enough to take on the job.
Well, I doubt I can do rough work anymore. I'll never wrestle wild cattle again. I won't be able to ride anything but gentle horses, and maybe not all of them either.
It's time you learn the difference between a cowboy and a cowman. A foreman can point out what's to be done and let the younger hands do it. If he can't ride a horse, he can ride in a buggy. He uses his head and lets the others use their hands and their backs. You've got a head on your shoulders, Huey. You showed that when you figured out how to snooker Fat Gervin.
Huey rubbed his neck, wondering. He had never liked having to answer for anything or to anybody except himself.
That horse just stomped him. That's what happened to Grady Welch. You don't know how hard it is to lose a good friend when you got so few.
Listening to Snort, Huey felt the chill again.
I'm afraid Snort's pretty far gone.
He doesn't know where he's at or where he's going. I'd hate to see you wind up like him, Huey. There's too many lost souls in this world already.
I'll bet Snort would enjoy working at the Circle W.
He's a good cowboy, but he's not foreman material. You could be.
Huey reached deep inside for courage.
If I was to go, I'd want to take Snort with me. Aparicio, too. And I'd like to have Bias Viegas there to cook for the hands.
Bias? The boys at the J Bar would kick like hell over losing him. But all right, he's yours.
Something inside told Huey to turn and run, but he stood his ground.
You sure you're ready to take a gamble on me?
If you're ready to take a gamble on yourself... Me? I think it's a cinch bet.
Huey's hand trembled, for self-doubts remained strong, but he steadied it enough to hold it out and shake with Jenkins.
Deal.
Snort, Tommy, and the Mexican hands had left their horses at the wagon yard. Huey got the group together and started them walking in that direction, Tommy holding Snort's arm to keep him from weaving off into the street. A heavy figure moved ahead of them, also going toward the wagon yard. Fat Gervin was on his way to look at the horses he had bought, the ones he expected to turn a nice profit for him. Jenkins climbed into his automobile while Peeler cranked the engine. Gervin turned to look as the car pulled away from the front of the saloon. He started to wave, but his hand froze in midair. Huey wondered who he recognized first, Peeler or Jenkins, and how long it took him to realize they were working together. Huey watched Gervin stagger back a step. His body seemed to sag. He stared into the dust until the automobile passed out of sight around the livery barn. He slumped onto the edge of a wooden sidewalk, his arms hanging limp. Most people called him Frank to his face. Only a few who had no tact or had nothing to lose called him Fat where he could hear it. Walking by him, Huey gave Gervin a quick glance.
Adios, Fat.
Huey had to pull his hat down tight to keep from losing it, for Alvin must have been driving all of 20 miles an hour. In an earlier time, Huey might have suspected he'd been drinking.
Been a good day.
He knew Huey had accepted Jenkins' offer.
I know you're anxious to tell Walter and Eve about it, but I need to go over by my place first.
Well, the news will keep, I guess.
Huey was still surprised at himself for accepting the job. Now he faced the awesome responsibility of living up to his promise.
I suppose you thought this all out? You're sure what you want to do?
Hell no, I ain't sure. The whole notion scares me plumb to death. The only thing I'm certain of is that I don't want to end up like Snort.
Hell, nobody ought to ever end up like Snort.
I wonder what Spring... Miss Renfro will think about me buckling down to be a foreman.
Only way to find out is to tell her.
Huey chewed on his lip.
If all of this had happened to me 4 years ago, things might have turned out different. I might not have gone off and left her.
Maybe it's not too late.
I'm afraid it may be. Farley Neal told me he was fixing to ask her to marry him.
Alvin chewed on his thoughts for several silent moments.
How much money have you got, Huey?
Well, Mr. Jenkins gave me $200. Except for what I had in my pocket, that's about it.
Now, some people don't have near that much to start a new life on. Of course, a bachelor don't need much. A change of clothes now and again, a little tobacco and whiskey money.
He gave Huey a speculative look and nearly ran out of the road ruts.
Whoa! Married man, now that's different.
Well, it takes two to get married.
And one of them's got to do the asking.
Alvin gave Huey another long look, and this time let the car run off into the pasture. He had to turn the wheel hard to pull back into the ruts.
Worst she can do is tell you no.
Huey's mouth went dry, and he felt cold sweat breaking on his face.
Farley Neal is a better man for her.
I don't doubt that, but you'll never know for sure that he's her choice unless you ask her yourself.
You think I've got a chance?
Hell, what would I know about women? I'm just an old horse and mule man.
Alvin scattered the peacocks as he drove into the yard. Old Lady Faversham sat in her wheelchair on the porch. She was shouting something at Alvin, but the engine noise drowned out the words, which Huey considered a blessing. Dust drifted up onto the porch, and she raised a lace handkerchief to her face. Huey looked for remorse in Alvin's pudgy face, but saw no sign of it. Cora came out onto the porch.
I'll bet Cora'll bake you a cake when she hears about your new job.
Huey doubted he could eat it, as nervous as he felt. The two men stepped down from the car.
All right, let's see what they can do, Julio.
I think they do pretty good.
The sound of voices drew his attention toward the barn where Farley Neal and Julio were hitching a raw team to a sledge for training to the harness. Huey watched a minute, wondering if Farley had asked her yet.
That's a good man yonder.
Yeah, and so are you, Huey. If you're gonna ask her, be damn certain you mean it this time. Be sure you won't be changing your mind again and riding away without her.
Huey walked up the steps, taking off his hat for Cora and nodding a silent greeting to Mrs. Faversham. Cora responded with warmth, but her mother only stared.
Is Spring here?
She's in the parlor, Huey. I'll take you.
Alvin caught his wife's arm.
Huey knows the way.
Huey opened the screen door and walked into the hall. The parlor was to the right, but he hesitated, twisting his hat out of shape in an effort to calm his shaking hands. He swallowed hard and entered the room. Spring sat with hoop and needles crocheting.
Hello, Huey. Did you accomplish what you set out to do?
Better than we had any reason to hope. I doubt that Fat Gervin gets any sleep tonight.
Nothing can pay for the harm he's caused you.
Well, what's done can't be undone. I've made up my mind to live with it and do the best I can.
You'll do fine. You always did, after your fashion.
Well, getting hurt myself has made me realize the hurt I caused you a long time ago. I wish I could undo that.
As you said, what's done can't be undone.
Well, just the same. If we'd married like we planned, look where we'd be now. We'd have us a farm of our own. We'd be somebody.
And you'd be miserable trying to make a farmer of yourself. You were a cowboy. And you still are.
Well, that black bronc fixed it to where I can't be the kind of cowboy I was. But I'm about to try my hand at being a foreman. It pays better, even if it ain't as much fun. Morgan Jenkins offered me the job at the Circle W.
You can do it if you set your mind on it.
Ah, the Circle W is a pretty place. In a wide valley with mountains all around. About the smilingest country I ever saw. I wish you could see it.
She put down the crochet work.
That sounds like an invitation.
I guess it is.
He searched her face for a sign of acceptance, but didn't see it. He felt as if the floor were sagging beneath his feet. His weakened leg must be giving way, he thought.
If I didn't know you better, I might even think it was a proposal.
He meant it to be, in his own awkward way. He waited for her to say more, but she didn't. She turned her eyes away from him. Disheartened, he took that for an answer.
Yeah, well, all the way from town, I wondered how I could get up the nerve to ask you. And I've done a poor job of it. I'm just a stove-up cowpuncher working for wages. You'll be a lot better off with Farley Neal.
Breath came hard, for his throat had tightened to the point of choking him. Turning, he walked out the door to the hallway, then onto the porch. Alvin and Cora looked at him in surprise over his quick retreat. Twisting the hat in his hands again, Huey cast a baleful look at Alvin.
Alvin? If you don't mind, I wish you'd take me over to Walter's right now.
Disappointment came into Alvin's eyes.
Sure, if that's what you want. Cora, I may be late for dinner.
Huey walked to the car, his head down.
Good riddance, if you ask me!
He felt his eyes burn. Footsteps told him Alvin was coming, so Huey opened the car door and took a seat.
You didn't give me time to answer.
She was standing beside the automobile.
You didn't have to say anything. I saw the answer in your eyes.
If you thought you saw doubt there, you were right. I haven't forgotten how close we came once, and how hard it was to see you leave. I wouldn't want to go through that again.
Well, with Farley, you won't have to.
He asked me, and I told him no. I like Farley very much, but I don't love him.
You don't?
I've loved only two men in my life. One went to the war in Cuba and died. The other just went. How do I know you wouldn't go again, Huey?
Well, I'm 4 years older, and I hope I'm 4 years smarter. I went off the last time looking for something. I didn't know what.
But you didn't find it?
If it was ever there, it's gone.
What if some morning you wake up and the wind calls you and you decide to go again?
Look, Spring, I'm not claiming it'll be easy. There'll be times it'll be tough. I'm liable to need help.
You'll have snort your nail.
Most of the time, Snort doesn't even know how to help himself. If you'll go with me, Spring, I'll never leave you again. Never.
Eyes shining, she reached over and clasped her fingers around his hand.
Then tell me about that smiling country.
He got out of the car and took her in his arms.
Cora! Do something! A fox is loose amongst the chickens!
The wedding ceremony was conducted on the big porch of the Laudermilk House to accommodate as many as possible of the couple's family and friends. A considerable overflow watched from the yard. About the only person Huey could think of who had not shown up for the event, other than Fat Gervin, was old Lady Faversham. Alvin said she was in her room, down with the vapors. A gentle south breeze brought the pleasant prospect of barbecue from an open pit which Julio Valdez tended past the yard fence. Alvin was first in line to kiss the bride and pump Huey's hand. Walter and Eve were next. Eve hugged Spring, then Huey.
I'd almost come to the giving up point. This goes to show the power of prayer.
Tommy stood behind his parents, followed by Blue Hannigan and his wife. Snort Yarnell kept almost an arm's length from Spring, taking her hand cautiously as if it were an eggshell. Eyes sorrowful, he turned to Huey.
I never thought you'd do it, old partner. First old Grady, now you.
Yeah, but I ain't dead.
Snort cast a furtive look back at Spring.
You might as well be. Things ain't going to be the same.
Everything changes. You know you've got a job with me out yonder in the mountains.
I'll be there. I'm gonna go get a little drunk first, and I sure do dread it.
C.C. Tarpley had a strong grip for a man so recently given up to die.
Huey, I owe you more than I can ever pay. But I brought you a gift.
He handed Huey a pocket watch.
Bought it in Midland. Cost me $3.
You're way too generous, C.C. I don't know what to say.
Ain't no need to say anything. I've carried it myself for the past year or so. It keeps good time.
Merchant Pearson Phelps and Dutch Schneider had come out from town together. Phelps gave Spring a bolt of fine cloth, enough to make several dresses. Schneider brought a bottle of champagne.
Save it for when it is just the two of you alone.
Sheriff Wes Wheeler didn't kiss the bride, but he took off his hat and bowed as he squeezed her fingers.
I hope, ma'am, that you can keep him out of jail.
I shall make every effort, Mr. Wheeler. Between Mr. Jenkins and myself, we'll try to keep him too busy to get into any trouble.
Morgan Jenkins and his driver came along in their turn.
Sorry I can't stay for the barbecue and other doings, Huey, but me and Peeler have got to get started if we're to make Alpine by dark.
He pointed toward a new black buggy beside the picket fence.
That's yours to use on the ranch, but don't feel like you've got to be in any hurry about getting there. The day after tomorrow would be soon enough.
He considered.
Oh, take a little longer if you want to. Them cattle won't be running off.
Alvin Laudermilk gave the couple a pair of matched grays for the buggy. They trotted westward along the wagon road at an easy pace.
I thought we'd make camp at the Pecos River tonight.
He and Spring spent their wedding night at the Laudermilks. A poor place for privacy. Especially when it seemed half the men in Upton County showed up to steal the bride, and then give the couple a joyous and noisy shivery that lasted until almost daylight. There had seemed little point in going to bed, and Huey had not. He held the reins in his right hand and took Spring's hand in his left.
Every time I saw you, I wanted to ask you to take me back, but I was scared to death you'd turn me down. I was ready to promise you just about anything.
And I was afraid you were going to ask me, and I couldn't say yes till you did promise me just about everything.
We've got a lot of lost time to make up for.
We have the rest of our lives to do it.
I feel kind of bad about Farley Neal, though.
He's a fine man. He'll find someone. Or someone will find him.
Jenkins and Peeler had taken most of Spring's boxes and her trunk in their automobile, leaving only the immediate necessities to be carried in a buggy. Huey glanced at a basket just behind the seat.
Cora put enough barbecue and fried chicken in there to last us a week if we decided to stretch the trip that long.
Spring leaned to kiss him, her lips soft and warm. She rested her head against his shoulder.
We've spent 4 years getting this far. I'm not in a hurry to reach the ranch.
He put his injured left arm around her. It didn't even hurt.
I'm not either.
Huey pulled the team down to a walk. Calloway, The Smiling Country is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 1998, Elmer Kelton. Published by arrangement with Elmer Kelton, care of Sobel Weber Associates, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Dylan Lynch, Drew Copus, Christopher Graybill, Joe Brack, Eric Messner, David Coyne, Catherine Aisle Ford, Yasmin Toison, Michael John Casey, Christopher Sheeran, Michael Glenn, Tim Carlin, Scott McCormick, Danny Gavigan, Ken Jackson, Richard Rowan, Andy Clements, James Konacek, Paul Fidalgo, Jonathan Watkins, Nanette Savard, Sherry Simpson, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Aisle Ford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Greg Reinfeld. Graphic audio sound design by Greg Reinfeld and Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Timothy Lynch. With original music by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Huey Calloway, be sure to look for Elmer Kelton's Texas Rangers series, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for previews of other thrilling titles in Graphic Audio.
Tell me, Kip, if you've done bad things your whole life, but you die doing something good, do you think that makes up for all the bad?
No.
Me neither.
But it's better than nothing. Orcholum is merciful.
Wonder if you'll say that after they're done with your village.
Gavin Guile is the Prism, the most powerful man in the world. He is High Priest and Emperor, a man whose power, wit, and charm are all that preserves a tenuous peace. A peace that is slowly rotting from the inside out.
This is all that's left of what was once a great civilization. Statues of great men. Broken by the pygmies who followed. Let me tell you something you already know. Something that all of you have believed, but no one dared to say. The wrong Guile won the Prism's war. They killed him because they were worried he would change everything. They feared him because Dazen Guile wanted to free us. Dazen knew that light cannot be chained.
As darkness slowly encroaches upon the land, Gavin receives a mysterious letter.
I'm dying, Gavin. It's time you meet your son, Kip. Lena.
As Gavin races to find his son, he learns of a new and dangerous threat to his empire. A man who calls himself King.
Your time is finished. Yours and the Chromarians. You're done! Light cannot be chained. Know this, Prism. We will take back what you've stolen. The horrors of your reign are almost at an end. And when it ends, I will be there. This, I swear!
With the death of his empire looming, Gavin will be forced to wage a war on multiple fronts. But little does he know, his assassin may be looking right before his very eyes.
You're a stupid, stupid boy, Kip. But maybe a dull sword can go where a sharp one wouldn't be allowed. Don't you forget this. Don't listen to him, you hear me? He's a liar. You will not fail me in this, Kip. You learn, and then you kill him.
Yes, Mother?
Kip, if you ever loved me, avenge me. Swear it by your worthless soul, Kip.
I swear to avenge you, Mother, by my very soul.
We'll be right back. Don't miss the beginning of the end in Brent Week's critically acclaimed new series, The Lightbringer Trilogy. Book 1, The Black Prism, Parts 1 through 3. Available now in graphic audio.
Available now in graphic audio.
Trouble, Lewis.
They think they are. They were here drinking all last night. Said they heard Ned Buntline was in the area, and they wanted to talk to him about writing a book about them.
Mr. Buntline is in Big Rock?
He was. He came through here last week, and he was headed into the High Lonesome to talk to some of the old mountain men before they all died off.
I hope you're not a killer, whoever you are. My name's Ned Buntline. I'm looking for a couple of mountain men by the name of Puma Buck, Huggy Charles, or Preacher.
The feller you call Preacher? Ain't but one man living knows where he is, and that's Preacher himself.
Who are you? I've never seen a robe that color. Is it buffalo fur? Was the buffalo a rare albino?
God damn, you sure ask a hell of a bunch of questions for a man who damn near froze solid.
I know things was too quiet this past winter. Ain't hardly spring yet, and here we are, square in the middle of a range war.
You can pick the spot. I don't give a goddamn how you do it. I just want Jensen dead.
It's him. Left his horse somewhere so he'd make less noise. Come on, you yellow bastard. Come on, Jensen.
I got you, you son of a bitch!
Don't miss Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man 21. Battle of the Mountain Man. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.